Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and I'm proud to say, Comrade Big Bird, welcome to the Resistance. And with me, I have...
Effective this week, this show will now be available in IMAX. You're welcome, everyone.
And...
Oh, fuck, it's dark again. At least, it's not darker than earlier. Fucking daylight savings, I'm not gonna have the kitchen. Well, after the kitchen.
Wait, why'd you end up there?
I don't know, I don't know if it's a long turn. Hey, these different scenery, right? At least I'm gonna be in your place again. You miss me?
Not really. Not after last time.
It wasn't that bad.
By the way... You have any idea how expensive Suntory is, man?
By the way, all I have is Diet Mountain Dew and cranberry juice, so good luck.
Oh, God.
I like cranberry juice.
Yes, I like cranberry juice, specifically cran-cherry juice. Diet cran-cherry, because, yeah.
That sounds like a horrific combination of words.
Okay. It's not. It's actually very good.
Okay, then. Yeah, the eternal scam that is daylight savings. How can you have daylight savings when the concept of time isn't even real?
Yeah, it's one of the monkey paws of life. It's like on one hand you get to have a sleep in case you work in the morning. It's like, oh boy, I don't sleep I need. But on the other hand, oh fuck, it's five minutes now, getting dark. dark as hell, as in dark when it gets like 8 or 9 dark.
Oh god. Anyways, here we are, episode 246. So how's everyone's week been going?
Well, got the bad and the good first. The bad: acid reflux sucks. Don't ever get it, kids. I have it, and last week, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was jolted up with the inability to breathe because my throat was on fire, and it blew my voice out for a couple of days, if you can't tell by how raspy I sound.
Damn.
Yeah, I have a history with throat problems. It's not fun. And I can't really stop it because I don't know when it's going to happen. So that's why I just stock up on Pepto-Bismol and try not to, you know, choke on my own bile. It's not fun waking you up at 4 in the morning in a coughing fit, hacking your lungs out. Even worse when your voice gets completely shot. Not fun.
Not fun at all.
Oh, and I still have daylight savings by waking up at 5:30 in the morning and being unable to go back to sleep because that's just how my brain works. That's just not a very pleasant time. But on the good, I recently picked up a wireless Apple keyboard for $20, which is a good deal anywhere. And I got some, let me read them here. Bose Quiet Comfort 15 headphones, because it was lost and found clean out day last week, and I got to call dibs on these. They're about 12 years old, but they still work pretty fine.
Nice.
That's how exciting my life has become. I'm excited about headphones and keyboards.
You know, there could be worse things to be excited by.
Yeah, that is true.
Anyways, Mark, what about you?
Well, it's been wondering a week of work and shit. Well, that's been less. Well, work has been getting slightly less. Maybe because people say I need things to go to the doctor, which they're going to this week. I had to last week, and then the next week I go to another one. You're going to go to almost every Tuesday this month. Damn. Okay, yeah, for different reasons, but it's a check-up thing. But yeah, it's like, Yeah, it's been doing that. And also, and a couple of things that I've watched, I checked out all the season 2 of Animaniacs on Hulu.
Oh, that came out?
Yeah, it came out like last week. I guess it just passed my mind, but all right. But this season's still good. I still think it's still sort of got the same structure as the last season. You got your war sketch, Pinky the Brain sketch, then the last thing they do, maybe some other thing. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of been like that format for now. Something is good. Like do hit that satire, right? Especially they have got some shots at throwing at the twice. I mean, I don't think they want to overrun it, but it's like there's some some shit when you see it.
Yeah.
Also, it's kind of weird when you see the Disney 23 Twitter feed, promoting Animaniacs. I know it's on Hulu, but it's like, yes, we're promoting a show for Warner Brothers.
I mean, it's like Nickelodeon promoting Animaniacs back in the day. It doesn't make sense then, but they had it.
You know, it is what it is. Weird times. Anyway, as for me, well, I finally saw that there Blade Runner 2049, since the new anime thing's dropping next week, and I gotta tell you, that movie is just so unrealistic. You really expect me to believe Ryan Gosling could kill Dave Bautista in a fight? Please. Really good movie, though. Still, not gonna lie. And Harrison Ford is still cool and good at movies, but seriously, that is just so unrealistic. Just like the idea that Atari will be relevant again in the year 2049. Actually, that sounds more like a horrifying nightmare.
I mean, they got it wrong. It's actually going to be in the year 2085 when they finally remake Robotron 2085.
Please tell me you're joking.
I'm only half joking, because the best Robotron game is Robotron 64. Everyone knows that.
Okay, then. I'm so horrified. Anyway, aside from that, I have also taken up attempting to befriend a mysterious neighborhood cat that likes roaming around my house a lot. I was able to feed it one time. We will see where things go from here. And with that out of the way, it's time to move on from the intro stuff to our usual business, starting, of course, with the new song discussion for the past week. As always, there will be a playlist down in the description, so you can follow along with us and pick up some new tunes and, schedule some new albums to anticipate in your calendars, or however you do that. I don't judge. So, starting right up at the top here, we have a brand new song from the upcoming collaborative Converge and Chelsea Wolf album, Blood Moon 1, coming out November 19th. The track is called Coil, and this one starts off with this, spooky arpeggiated acoustic guitar thing, mainly allowing for the haunting vocals from Chelsea and, I'm assuming, Stephen Brodsky as well to sing, over top in that very haunting manner, before the rest of the band enters in with the slow burn drums and those corny keyboard synth things that kind of sound like somewhere between King Diamond and King Crimson. Probably more King Diamond just because of the spooky, witchy aesthetics of it all. Especially once the vocal dynamics start to saturate everything and it starts to sound more cult-like. Especially with the rest of the band coming in, guitars and all. Kind of sounds like a version of Ghost that doesn't completely suck shit. This has been your weekly obligatory Rob jab at Ghost. What has been met?
Yeah, okay, so starting things off with the same three-string arpeggio as Devin Townsend's E.R., this one. That's a real good way to get me real confused on what this is building to. It's just conflicting itself because it's in a minor key with this structure. It's A minor instead of C major. But what it was building to was, I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. It's just okay. I feel like it's trying to do a little too much here.
Well, at least I'm still on board for things. Can't win them all, I suppose. But moving on to the next track here. So I am aware that we live in an era of constant reiteration in our media, revivals and reiterations, everything from franchise filmmaking to endless video game sequels and remakes. And while I have my own opinions about whether or not this is all innately a good or bad thing, I will jump the gun a bit on the rest of this segment and ask, did we really need a goddamn fucking Stabbing Westward reunion in the year of our Lord 2021? Seriously? Seriously? What the fuck? But, for all those people who really remember those one or two big radio rock hits, sort of, were they even that big? Like, I heard them, but I'm not sure they were ever on the level of any of the other fucking turgid industrial butt rock of the late 90s and 2000s. Anyway, so, yeah, it's been a while since they've hit the studio, about 20 years or so, I believe, and they have now announced that they are getting back together, well, minus a couple of original members at least, to put out a brand new album, March 18th, 2022, called, well, Chasing Ghosts. Not even the name is terribly exciting or interesting. And we have the first new single here, I Am Nothing, which, wow, way to pretty much write the review of this song in three words. I mean, boy howdy, it sure does sound like Stabbing Westward in the year of our Lord 2021. This slow, middling, trudging tempo, monotonous riff, generic radio hard rock vocals, synths that honestly sound like the drunken love child of Metroid Prime and the newer Doom titles. Again, do we need this? Who asked for this? Seriously, who? Give me names, I just want to talk.
Well, if anyone out there was just itching for some bog-standard bassline Stabbing Westward, then this is the song for you. It delivers all of those vibes and nothing more in a package you would expect. And just on the notion of how big those songs were, I mean, Save Yourself was in the Tekken the Motion Picture dub soundtrack back in 1998 when that was a thing.
Oh yeah, the bad old days of new metal anime soundtracks.
Yep, you had that in Tekken, Korn and Alice in Chains and Street Fighter, and with Dragon Ball Z, you had Disturbed, Pantera, even Dream Theater in one such movie.
Really?
Yeah, in the History of Trunks, there's like five or six tracks from Scenes from a Memory just all over that movie.
Man, I gotta see if I can rewatch that version of that movie eventually.
You should. It's fun when the narrator's talking about how everyone's dying and you hear the opening riffs of Home just blaring in the back.
But, I imagine that would be more interesting than just listening to Stabbing Westward.
Most things are, naturally.
Of course. Anyway, time to move on to the next track here. We have entry number 30 into the 2021... At this point, definitely going into 2022, Adultum Singles Program, unless it cuts off at a random point. Of course, we're about, you know, a few days away from the next iteration of the Adultum Festival. So surprise, surprise, this one is a new track from Dawn Richard called Loose Your Mind. Yes, that's loose, as in two O's. Get it? Yeah. It's funny. It's a play on words.
Yeah, because check it out. Just loose with yourself, as in, you know, have fun, let loose, which works well with this very, with this beat, which is very, like, funky, spacey, like, this is what you would hear, like, when you feeling those vibes, like, even the lyrics for you goes, like, I'll make you lose, baby, lose your mind, make you lose your mind, baby, I can, what you want tonight, I can feel in my bones, hey, I know it look good, I had three drinks, everything looks better when the beat hit right. And the beat does hit right. Like, this is like, Like it's definitely what yeah, it, this is something that Dunn would do on this. Like, it was like, it is, it is like, yeah, I say it's very good. Like, I thought this would have fit on the, well, it would have fit on the, I'm sure at least like a couple of months back. But all it is. Spunky, spacey, vibey. Yeah, I get with this.
Yeah, that was like, what, back, literally last day of April, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a pretty, you know, fun, funky, weird kind of song from Dawn. I dig it. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. Oh boy. Green Day again, eh? And it's a soundtrack piece! So you know it's gonna be extra, extra bland. Specifically, we have a song called Holy Toledo, and I'm realizing there may in fact be a typo in the notes here, because I typed it Holy Toledo. Then again, this is one of those cases where, look, the band obviously didn't care, so why should I care about spelling it correctly? But for what it's worth, if you need the context, this was written for the soundtrack of a romantic comedy called Mark, Mary, and Some Other People, which premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival back in June, and released this past weekend on, you know, theaters and on-demand home video, which means absolutely none of you watched it because you were too busy watching that other thing that came out this week. You know, the one. The thing that everyone was having discourse about for months, because the internet always has to be a fucking hellscape where no one can ever talk about movies like a grown-up. Instead, everybody's gotta be fucking sniping and owning each other like we're fucking teenagers on a goddamn internet forum. Fuck.
That might come back later.
It might. But, yeah, so it sounds like Green Day soundtracking a romantic comedy that no one cared about. God, this sounds so cringy. I almost thought they were soundtracking a fucking Hallmark movie. Because that's kind of what, like, the cornier percussion and, like, synthier electronic parts on it sounds like, doesn't it? Like, fucking that weird-ass subgenre of Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yeah, still not into this whole late 60s boogie rock vibe they're sticking with. And, yeah, the song's just kind of, hey, Toledo, stay a while. There's a Burger King down the road. And also maybe Tyler somewhere in that city as well.
You know, provided that he's not trying and failing to buy some ribs. Gotta stimulate that economy, yeah. You know?
Is it weird that I'm keep picking up the Canker Sisters for some reason?
That's not where my mind went, but okay.
Hey, you do you, man. We're not here to judge. But anyway, moving on to the next track here. So, after that time last year when Charlie XCX found her way into damn near every major year-end list with her 2020 quarantine album, How I'm Feeling Now, she's now back with yet another new studio album coming out next year. March 18th, to be precise. It's called Crash, and apparently, this is going to be her last one under her current contract with Atlantic Records. So, yeah, I assume that one will probably sweep a lot of year-end lists as well. You never know. And we have the new single from the album here, New Shapes, which features guest contributions from a couple of other artists, specifically a French singer-songwriter named Christine and the Queens. Yes, that stage name reverts to exactly, quantitatively, one individual.
Okay.
And Caroline Polachek, who I did a quick search on the website. I don't believe we've ever talked about her formally, but she's been around for a while. The main immediate reference point I know is she was featured on a song called You and I by producer Washed Out, which was on, I think, the very, very first Adult Swim singles compilation in 2010. If not that one, then the 2011 one. But yeah, that, like, 10 years ago. That's a while.
Yeah, here's another reference. She was in not one but two tracks on Wong Chuck's Point Never's last album.
Oh yeah, that too. Almost forgot about that. But, you know, speaking of quarantine recorded albums. But, as for this song, I'll admit I don't listen too deeply to Charlie XCX in general outside of a couple of the big hits. So take this opinion with a grain of salt, but the song ain't too bad. The beat has a nice, like, bouncy, catchy electropop vibe and tempo, and that corny little burst of synth running throughout the song, that kind of hits a nice little soft spot for me. Admittingly, it's a bit hard to tell that it's Charlie singing on a lot of the songs, since she doesn't do that usual, you know, Charlie vocal-ism, if you know, you know. I guess it's not something she does anymore, save for maybe like a tiny bit in the chorus. And of course, Christine and the Queens and Caroline also sound pretty solid on this, with the song overall being one of those, you know, very common ones about, like, complicated relationships and flings and shit and all that, but it's not bad. It's a pretty solid enough little pop tune.
Yeah, I kind of like this a lot. Like, maybe because it was like, okay, like I did the whole 80s similar to pop vibes, like, I'm kind of jamming to this. I'm really liking this. And maybe because it's like, I think for Charlie XCX, she's been like one of those, like one of those pop stars that does sound so pop that, not everybody, it goes underappreciated to me. I mean, she gets the sound to say, like, that sounds so pop, so, they're so good, but I think it's just, it's that style that goes under the radar for everyone, but I kind of like this. I'm really digging this. Now I see how that one was like.
I'll also commend the production on here. It's very smooth all throughout, with some excellent reverb use and 80s style synth work, notably with a few lines of what I like to call the Bruce Hornsby synth bass. If you know, you know.
I gotta listen to Bruce Hornsby someday.
You should. The way it is the greatest song ever written.
Interesting. Alright, so moving on to the next track here. So it looks like professional beer pong player Post Malone is taking a break from his day job to return to his side hustle of making music. You have to wonder what it'd be like if that was his full career or something. I think I got the directionality of that right, but it looks like he announced a new album in the works, no title or release date yet, but we have what is very likely the first song coming off of that album called One Right Now, and oh hey, look at that, he brought The Weeknd along with him. So yeah, Post Malone and The Weeknd. You will not be shocked to learn that, lyrically speaking, this song is kind of an expected MO of, you toyed with my feelings, you fucked around behind my back, these hoes ain't loyal, screw you bitch, I'ma move on to someone else. Middle fingers flipping in the air right now, you know, one of those kinds of songs. The Weeknd, of course, sounds pretty good on this, you know, toxic relationships being something his music is no stranger to, and Post, still fucking sounds like Post, make of that as you will. And the beat itself is alright. It feels like a Weeknd B-side, more so than a starring, like, main track kind of beat. But it's serviceable, I suppose.
We begin a lot of, like, Weeknd tracks, whether it be solo or him being featured on something, like, so we expect he had to track with fucking Sweet House Mafia and all shit. Like, yeah, but this one is like, eh. I mean, it's alright, but I'm feeling this the least. I don't know, maybe because like, it sounds like the weekend of songs that I kind of don't vibe with. I mean, maybe on the production level, like, yeah, I don't feel it as much. And Post Malone. I've been much of, you know, that heavy on Post, so I don't know. I just didn't care for it as much.
Yeah, this song is kind of in a weird spot. If this were a weekend song, it would be kind of eh. But technically it's a Post Malone song, which means the song is good whenever Austin isn't singing, so, you know, there's that. Like, yeah. He's trying to do the Weeknd's delivery, and it does not work here.
No, no, it does not. But, yeah, that's something we'll have to... Well, we don't necessarily have to listen to it. I get the feeling my morbid curiosity will get the better of me. We're going to move on from that to the next track here. The final song that we'll be talking about this week. Aw, shit, motherfuckers. We got new Slipknot material in the building. Let's fucking go!
All right. I'd scream, but my throat is still very much in pain.
You will be screaming in spirit. Anyway, so for the past several months now, for a while at this point, the band has been talking of a potential new album on the horizon. They've been saying they've been hoping to release it sometime in 2021, but unless they decide to shadow drop it in the next, like, 5 or 6 weeks, my best bet is they're angling for early 2022 at this point. And as a reminder, this album would in fact, when released, be their final one to fulfill their contract with Roadrunner Records, which would be an interesting spot the band would find itself in. Would they get scooped up by another label? Would they re-up their contract? Or would they start their own in-house thing? I mean, they are, like, a very sizable, popular band still in this day and age, so maybe they could pull it off. But, yeah, once the album comes out, and based on the fact that we have a new song here, this would probably be the quickest turnaround we've gotten between new Slipknot albums in a while. Like, at least since the gap between Iowa and Volume 3, which is, like, a few months short of 3 years. So, we just have to wait until we get an exact release date on this shit, and then we shall see. But, yeah, we of course have a new song here called The Chapel Town Rag. And getting into the song itself, it of course opens with this intro, ominous, synthetic, hazy sample with ominous right hits before ramping up into a gigantic assault of chugging hard syncopated riffs and lots of nice pounding percussion and rapid kicks. The pre-chorus is particularly nasty with a lot of its blast beats, tremolos, and other rapid-fire drum work. Corey Taylor's vicious snarl just really bringing the intensity all throughout the whole thing. And the chorus brings in some, you know, nice melody, if a bit off-kilter melody. It's kind of offset things. And of course, there's a really great bridge towards the, you know, end of things that has this big, grooving halftime feel. The percussion in particular, thanks to the production feeling exceptionally thunderous and how it accentuates the rest of the song, with an even somehow slower feeling breakdown throwing its weight around like a monster towards the end. It is exactly the kind of gnarly, heavy shit that you want from your contemporary Slipknot, and now we just have to wait until whenever the hell that new album is, so come on, don't keep us waiting. Maybe Clown will drop some kind of ominous hint or slip up in an interview somewhere. Don't keep me waiting.
You know, you say possibly doing their own label thing. That is a very high possibility. That's what a lot of, you know, bands and artists are going towards, just publishing it under their own name and licensing it out to a larger label for distribution. So that's a possibility. But yeah, for this track, it feels like a giant amalgamation of all their super heavy styles. The intensity of Iowa mixing with the rap styles of the self-titled and the overall structure heard on All Hope Is Gone and We're Not Your Kind. It's very good. And the lyrical content is very much, chill the fuck out on the internet, people. Goddamn.
Yeah. Just, you know, movie discourse. And I thought about that in particular because apparently yesterday everyone decided that the singer from Every Time I Die was going to be one of the main characters of Twitter.com because he made some backhanded comment about Seinfeld. It's like, are y'all really that fucking bored? Go outside and touch some grass. God.
Remember, we're dealing with people yelling at Big Bird right now.
Just discourse everywhere.
It is awful. I can't even enjoy the sports world without all this shit getting involved. Thanks a lot, Aaron Rodgers. Hope you get better.
Oh, great.
We have to make statements like that for legal reasons, because if we said how we truly, honestly felt, I'm pretty sure that would get us put on a list. Anyway, great song, though. The subject matter that it's about infuriates us in real life. But now, with that out of the way, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have the news topics to discuss. So stay tuned. And we're back. So, we have a few news topics to discuss here. The first of these is, you know, concerning a pretty major upcoming release, that being Adele's new album 30, and the subject of vinyl records, a thing that I'm aware my friend Alex likes to collect a lot of, and listen to a lot of.
Yes, in fact, last week I actually took a trip to the record store here in the city and got myself three albums I've been looking for a while. Flying Lotus's Yasuke soundtrack, a new pressing of Opeth's Blackwater Park, and a new pressing of Porcupine Tree's The Incident. Very, very good. I went a little over my budget, but, you know, it's worth it for quality music. I mean, what else am I going to spend that much money on? Random photos on the internet that I can just right-click save?
those motherfuckers are gonna get taxed to shit, and it's gonna be great.
That's gonna be lovely. But yeah, the world of vinyl records has grown in quite a large rate. It's been growing pretty much every year for the last decade plus, which is good. It's basically the only kind of music you can buy at like Target and Best Buy now, because they don't. Who's gonna buy a CD nowadays? And one such album that's looking to shatter all kinds of sales records is coming out next week. It is Adele's 30. And there was a report from Variety that had it had a headline that I'm sure the writer there was just waiting for a reason to write. It says, Adele's 30 sends vinyl pressing plants into overdrive, while LP shortages leave many artists chasing pavements. That's a joke, kids. It's a reference to her song, Chasing Pavements. But, yeah, some sources have reported that more than 500,000 copies of this album have been pressed to meet demand, which is concerning considering there's a lot of supply chain shortages. And while that does sound concerning to people who might not be able to get, you know, independently pressed albums on vinyl because of that much of an order, I did some digger deeping, and as it turns out, apparently this album was turned in early to Jumpstart pressings, citing an interview that Ed Sheeran did, believe it or not. Don't ask, I'm just reading it from Uproxx here. And deeper in my research, pressing plants around the world can manufacture about 160 million albums a year. So 500,000 would be only roughly 0.3% of total records made in one whole year. Which is weird because apparently the demand is well beyond 160 million albums a year. But, you know, they're doing what they can. They're doing what they can. Yeah. To note, though, there are some serious issues at hand with the supply chain shortages, along with labor issues, lack of paper and PVC, which is why Devin Townsend's albums have been pushed back to December, lack of PVC materials. It sucks. They're doing the best they can, but this is causing turnaround times to grow much larger, averaging about 6 to 8 months, so if you're a big-name artist, get your records done early. Or, you know, schedule them to be released later.
Yeah. That seems like shit's fucked in a lot of parts of the world, but you probably already figured that. Just, damn, that's a lot of vinyl.
Yes, it is.
So much vinyl.
Yes, it is. Remember, Billie Eilish's albums sell really well on vinyl because I'm pretty sure it's a divide of maybe a small amount of, you know, actual audiophile listeners, and the rest of them are like teenagers with frickin' Crosley Cruisers. You're gonna destroy albums on those things. Don't buy them. Friends don't let friends buy Crosleys.
No, no, they do not.
I don't know what it is, but I'm going. Yeah, what you said.
All you need to know is that it's not worth it. Anyway, with that little tidbit out of the way, Mark, you want to carry us into the next one?
Yes, I will. Hello, folks. Welcome to the segment I have to call Hip Hop on the Small Screen. So, nice. So, there have been recent news of, you know, some hip hop related things going back to TV. Hopefully, next year we'll see Atlanta coming back on FX. Wink, wink, please.
Soon.
Is it to mention something that's, you know, hip hop related on a network owned by Disney? Here's something else that's on something owned by Disney. So, remember a few weeks ago we talked about that stupid Wu-Tang cryptocurrency bullshit and how I joked about when is the next season of Wu-Tang American Saga, the series that's about basically a Wu-Tang biopic but for TV.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah, as of recently, it's been renewed for a third and final season.
Final?
So, what? Which is kind of, okay, so, and I haven't seen the show, because, like, okay, like, my season, like, the second season is where, I mean, is where, you know, is where they start the, you know, start the rise, they... So the rest, they, you know, they recorded their first album. They got signed to Loud. They got signed to Loud, and we're just busy trying to making the full deal. He got floppy disk. Yeah, remember those? Remember those? He has made floppy disks of beats. Like he like got from like Raekwon for his album. One of the Cuban Links, Ghostface Killah for Iron Man. Old Dirty Bastard for Turns Against Six Chambers, and I'm guessing Lucifer, Liquid Sword. So that's where I ended off. And the thing is, I think it's going to season three. I think it might end around the 2000s era, or at least that's what I think. Because ain't no way they're going to mention that other bullshit that I mentioned last time. We talked about when they got. Do the whole currency, the cryptocurrency, but they not. I don't think they will. Or the whole Ghostface Killah, Edge of Bronson beat, they ain't gonna do that shit. Or, I don't know, somewhere Wizard meets Quentin Tarantino. I don't think they're gonna do that shit. But yeah, I guess, I don't know if that's gonna end. I think it might end with, I'm guessing around, like, I know it's gonna be in around the 90s and. Okay, that's fine. I mean, maybe it's good. Maybe it's good that it'll go too long, to where people start losing interest. And I don't know when it's gonna air. I mean, the first season aired in 2000, like in 2019. They took a break in 2020 because of reasons.
Yep.
And it this year. And here's the facts. Like I mentioned that the RZA and Alex Tizzy, their creators and this news. Also produced alongside Method Man and Brian Gazer, which involves, you know, Imagine Television, Imagine, you know, Entertainment, with the Raindrop logo with it, you know, with that shit. And oh yeah, since I mentioned Disney earlier, guess what's involved in season two in the production? 20th Television.
Wait, don't you mean 20th Century Fox?
You know. Also, yeah, an arm of the Walt Disney Company.
Basically, part of Disney, I guess.
Well, you know what they say: Wu-Tang is for the children.
And I mean, it's glad that they you know end on their own terms. Which okay, I'm okay. At least they're saying we're going to end it right here. We're not getting canceled, which is good. I mean, at least they didn't pull why the last man.
But
given how I like the show, like the show, I mean, the show's pretty good to me. Like I like the point that they give up. Like I love the dude that played Old Dirty Bastard. I thought that was kind of good. Like good. And of course you got some people you know like Asher Sanders. I know that dude been in stuff like Moonlight, and I think he's in Eon Isaac 2. And of course, and that guy plays the RZA and Shameik Moore, which. All you know, Mouth Mouth Spider Verse. He's a Raekwon. Oh, and the rapper Dave East. He's a Method Man. Like I said, he's in on the own terms. And until then, when it comes out. Hopefully, I don't know if that or when Atlanta come out. Oh, it says I mentioned Atlanta. Donald Glover was right to tweet that. He's still like okay the whole thing with his show and you know that other FX show about a rapper, except it's the one we don't like, you know. The big comparison to them, even though they said, I did this shit first. Me, I did it first. Which, well, true. He did it better, by the way.
It's true, he did.
And so that has been Hip Hop Small Screen.
Yeah. That's been the not horrible news. Now we have to go to the horrible news.
Oh, hell.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the one you all probably heard about and are still hearing about a multitude of things. Yeah, we are talking about it. The unfortunate recent tragedy that befell Astroworld 2021. The third official iteration of Travis Scott's yearly festival, you know, named after that big album that everyone heard. So, I'm going to lay this out. I took a look at all the information that's available so far to try to lay out the facts and like a vaguely cohesive timeline of things, you know, the event and how other people explain things. So yeah, Astroworld 2021 scheduled for November 5th and 6th at the Energy Park in Houston, Texas, like usual, a venue that caps out at about 2,000 people, but for this year was only selling about 50,000 in attendance. I'm guessing that's the limit they put due to COVID regulations and such. Yeah, so yearly festival, organized by Live Nation, hell, even live streamed by Apple Music. At least the Travis Scott performance was. Now, as you can imagine, with any big festival event, there were lots and lots of security precautions in place. To wit, 528 officers from the Houston Police Department, 755 security officers provided courtesy of Live Nation, 20 ambulances stationed outside courtesy of the Houston Fire Department, and 2 ER physicians, 6 registered nurses, 2 paramedics, and 9 emergency medical technicians, among others, provided by a group called Paradox. Paradox, like doctors, not like paradox, like, you know, yeah, you get it. In fact, per the words of Mayor Sylvester Turner, evidently this event had more security provided for it than the recently concluded 2021 World Series. You know, this is probably likely the result of the fact that if you look at the history of Travis Scott's behavior during live performances and shit, there tends to be a very unfortunate history of rowdy to the point of fatal life-threatening behaviors. Whether it be, you know, fans jumping from balconies, tramplings, people rushing the stage, like in Lollapalooza 2015, for example. Hell, and just to kind of make things worse, the group that provided all the medical personnel, Yeah, they were apparently on the receiving end of two lawsuits for deaths and injuries at other concerts staffed by their personnel. Not fun. Now, getting to the actual, of course, day of, the energy was very, like, heated beforehand. Like, with fans early on in the day knocking over the outside gates perimeters and storming past metal detectors to get in, with at least one injury reported just from this. So, like, the music wasn't even fully going on yet. In fact, according to, you know, an eyewitness account testimony given to the New York Times, Houston Police Chief Troy Finner was very, very concerned about the energy in the crowd, so much so that he personally spoke to Travis Scott about the whole thing. Apparently, he has a personal connection with him or something. So, of course, as the events went on later into the night, the medical staff was already very, very overwhelmed by things, so much that by about 8:15, which for the record was less than an hour before Travis Scott took the stage for his performance, they stopped documenting patients formally and even began triage, which is the process of having to ration care to, you know, various individuals, supposedly struggling to dole out naloxone, you know, as a medication for stuff like opioid overdoses and whatnot. Then a countdown came up, which was about 30 minutes prior to Scott's performance. This is the point where the crowds began to compress together very tightly and aggressively, with many reports of barricade hopping and overcrowding by about 8:39 p.m. There's, like, miscellaneous scattered video footage of this all throughout the internets and everything. And then we get to the timeline of the disaster proper. At 9:06 p.m., Travis Scott officially appears on stage and begins performing. And this is the point where the crowd surges toward the stage, causing an aggressive amount of compression within all the individuals, people falling over, getting injured, and creating a general sense of panic. Hell, just 5 minutes later, at about 9:11 p.m., attendees were already trying to escape the stage area. At 9:23 p.m., shit got so crazy that fans were climbing the speaker riggings to try and escape the madness, and fans were documented screaming for medical help just a minute later, and even trying to get Scott's attention to stop the crowd, but around that time frame, he kept performing anyway. And various attendees were also begging, like, you know, the venue personnel to end the show early due to the crazy injuries and, you know, fatalities and whatnot, but none of them were able to get through. Most infamous by this point, video floating around social media of a woman, at least I believe it was a woman, informing one of the live stream camera operators that people were dying in an attempt to see if they could do something to stop it, but the footage appears to show them getting, you know, blown off as the cameraman are trying to work. Now, in the interest of fairness and reflecting reality, it is worth noting that, despite the ire directed at the cameraman, the concert goer would later post on Instagram begging people not to harass the individual in question. I mean, you probably saw Mike Seatown tweeting about that whole thing earlier today. Yeah. Additionally, there's also apparently filmed footage of members of the audience dancing on top of an ambulance that was in the crowd. That's the kind of vibe that we're dealing with, it seems. Then the CPR treatments begin around 9:28 p.m. on various unconscious attendees. But the situation was so overwhelming that at a certain point, the other concert goers began trying to perform CPR as well, including reports that some medical personnel were just looking there dumbfounded, like, How am I supposed to do CPR? I don't understand how to do this. But there were allegedly also reports of people being administered Narcan, you know, another drug that helps with opioid overdosing. I need to say the word supposedly and allegedly, because according to a later report by Police Chief Finner, a security guard working the event supposedly lost consciousness after feeling, quote, a prick on his neck, suggesting the idea that someone was injecting drugs randomly into people at the event. Which, honestly, to me sounds like a colossal load of bullshit because, you know, cops, but it is what it is. Anyway, by the time 9:38 rolled around, Sam Pena, the official Houston fire chief, had declared this a mass casualty event, this being the exact time where most of the fatalities happened. As for the count, we'll build up to that eventually. There's a couple of quoted accounts here from some individuals at the event. To quote a high school senior named Nick Johnson, who was at the concert, "Everyone was passing out around you, and everyone was trying to help each other, but you just couldn't move. You couldn't do anything. You can't even pick up your arms up. It just got worse and worse." He even said fans started to, you know, crush each other, people were screaming, and that it even felt like 100 degrees in the crowd. Scott did eventually pause the concert twice, at 9:30 p.m. and 9:42 p.m. due to the disastrous events happening. And at a certain point, Houston Police Executive Assistant Chief Larry Satterwhite asked Live Nation promoters at the event to end the concert early, which they eventually did decide, ending at around 10:15 p.m., 30 minutes short of schedule. And by the time all was said and done, and by the time, you know, about this time that you're listening to this, or as we're recording it, the full list of fatalities is as follows. 8 deaths total, unfortunately including those of a 14 and 16-year-old. 25 hospitalizations, 11 of which were in a state of cardiac arrest. And about 300 other documented non-fatal injuries. Yeah, that is a lot.
Okay.
Apparently it was so bad that, like, I think even some of the police staff or the Live Nation promoters were even quoted as saying, when you have, like, you know, young crowds with this kind of energy, you can't just stop the concert right away. What if there's a riot or something? Not exact words, just kind of a paraphrase.
Okay. There is one very important rule with live music. When someone falls down, you pick them up. It's not difficult to follow. You're on stage, you see everything. If you see something going around, if you see something going down, you have a responsibility to check on the people in the crowd, make sure they're okay and they're safe and they're, you know, not dead.
As someone who's been to a lot of metal shows, can confirm this is how it works. Yeah. Hell, there's even a quote from a freelance photographer from Associated Press named Amy Harris who described everything as having an aggressive crowd atmosphere through the day because of the way fans were behaving, pushing and rushing the stage barricades and prohibited VIP admission areas. It was definitely the most chaotic festival environment that I've been in. I felt uneasy all day. Yeah, this was kind of fucked. And someone pointed this out, like, you wouldn't see behaviors like this at, like, smaller shows. More than likely because there's a greater sense of social accountability. Like, if you fuck up, like, to pick someone up or you try to stomp someone out at a local show, word about that gets around fast. But obviously at a bigger show like this, especially when you have someone like Scott who has, as we've said, a pattern of shit like this happening at his shows, including the occasional encouragement of such behaviors, what do you expect? They're gonna fucking go nuts because there's not really a lot of accountability there.
Yeah, and sadly there is a track record of things like this happening, namely at a show in 2017 at Terminal 5 in New York City, as someone was being egged on by Travis Scott to jump from the second floor balcony into the crowd, there was a man who was pushed from a third floor balcony and left paralyzed.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
That's the kind of thing that happens at Travis Scott concerts. But, yeah, just all of that happening, and as far as the aftermath, so Travis Scott supposedly offered condolences to all those who died during the incident and offering to cover costs and provide financial support and mental health resources to affected families and survivors of the incident, even refunding purchases to all surviving Astroworld attendees. Roddy Rich, who was also there at the event, is donating his compensation for the performance at Astroworld to the families of the victims. Apple Music is trying to cover their ass by deleting any and all social media posts about the festival. And as far as the biggest fallout from all this, aside from, you know, the loss of human lives, there are, in fact, a handful of class action lawsuits going around against several of the parties involved. Specifically, Travis Scott, Live Nation, and apparently even Drake, who had also gone on stage to perform with Travis Scott at one point. Got to mention that part.
Yeah. To his credit, this was announced on Monday. Travis Scott did say that he will cover funeral costs for the people who died at the event.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's just only one very fucked up horror show. Really, I mean, from the large compact crowds, which really, I saw that footage of it all packed like a fucking can of tuna. Like, that's just pure fucking anarchy. Like, maybe, like, what does it remind me of that, was it that Woodstock 99 shit that we saw?
Woodstock 99, Altamont, The Who. There are incidents that really should have never happened, and this is unfortunately one of those. And this is just starting. You know, there's going to be a big law enforcement investigation as to why this happened in the first place.
Yeah, because when you bring in that level of personnel, you think they'd be able to do a better job. Like, especially those stories of, like, people, like, personnel on hand just not knowing how to do CPR. Like, God, no wonder Paradox had lawsuits on hand.
Yeah, and remember, there were cameras everywhere because this was live on Apple Music, as evident by that unfortunate screenshot that's been floating around of an ambulance in the crowd.
Yeah, which leads me to wonder if, like, Apple in any way is going to get implicated in a class action lawsuit themselves. Because we already have, like, you know, the main performer of the festival, and you have even Live Nation, which Lord knows how that one's going to fuck up, you know, the live show industry. Because that shit's already on a very precarious ledge because of everything that's happened in the past, like, roughly 2 years. Lord knows what the hell this is going to do if, you know, it turns out in favor of the people filing the lawsuits.
This is only just the beginning of, you know, all of this. There's going to be more in the weeks to follow as more details are unearthed regarding this whole thing.
Thanks a fucking lot, Travis Scott. Yeah, I know we have to look at, like, you know, the bigger issues here, like, you know, the concert promoters and everything, and, you know, the security staffings and everything, but it's hard not to place some of the blame on Scott himself for, as we said, his previous patterns of behavior in regards to tragedy at his shows. And apparently I've been hearing something how, like, way back in the day, like 2012 or something, apparently a producer he was working with, they were, like, hanging out with a bunch of other, you know, their associates one time, said, like, producer was having, like, a really bad seizure, and Scott apparently just left the room, like, without doing a damn thing about it.
Gosh. And one more time, just in case anyone forgot, the rule of live music: if you see somebody down the floor, you pick them up. If you're on stage, you stop the show to check on them. Fantano did a video about this, and he had some bits from a Playboy Cardi show where he was checking on somebody in the crowd. And a more famous clip that's been circulating this past weekend from an old Linkin Park show, where it goes back and forth. Someone's down, what do you do? Pick them up. It's a very simple rule to follow, and if you don't follow it, well, you get this.
Yeah. So, that's the full extent of what we know thus far. We're going to keep, you know, an eye out for any further developments. God, this whole fucking thing sucks.
Yeah.
But with that news out of the way, that concludes all the news discussion, thus meaning there's only really one more thing to talk about here, and that is, of course, the new album releases for the week of November 12th, 2021. Starting at the top, we have the new album between Aesop Rock and Blockhead with Garbology. We have a new project from Snoop Dogg with Algorithm. We have a new album from French Montana with They Got Amnesia.
Oh.
There, Mark. There's the new album from British punk band Idols with Crawler. We have a new project, the new solo project from Damon Albarn with The Nearer the Fountain, More Pure the Stream Flows. We have a new project from a pop rock band Walk the Moon with Heights. We, of course, have the latest of Taylor Swift's various album re-recordings with Red, Taylor's Version. And last but certainly not least, we have Silk Sonic with their debut album, An Evening with Silk Sonic. It is now time to...
Oh, yes, finally.
Yeah.
Finally. It is now time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Asher, where I just, what do I talk about? I talk about stuff, I guess.
Hot wings.
That too.
Man, I could go for some wings right now. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Well, on Twitter too, I have MTV Media where, I don't know, shit happens on mine. And of course, my site, havewhat.com. A review just got posted there recently. It's on, I mean, it's on anime called Mage Summer. Why? I don't know. I just say, fuck it. I'm just going to choose a random, if it's a, I'm choosing some random fucking title.
Yeah. Anyway, as for me, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, etc. at Rob Barracuda. You can email me at robert@sareerresolution.com for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video usually goes up on the official YouTube channel. So subscribe, hit the bell tab so you're notified whenever new episodes go up there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @SurrealRezzo. Like us on Facebook. Visit the website SurrealResolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast.1a, and all of that good stuff. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat so you can do whatever it is y'all do on Discord. And of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, that'll about do it for this week. We'll, of course, be back later on this week with the album roundup for October 2021. Looking forward to that. So, until next time, clever outro segment.